show.
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 81. I'm your host, John X. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. Denver Film Fest week rolls on. That's right. We hit a bit of a schedule snafu where we did the first two interviews last week. The last three are coming up this week. And I'll tell you, it's been an enormous thrill getting to do this. And getting to talk to such talented, cool, off-kilter, unusual people and just get to pick their brain about what they do and what makes them tick and how they do what they do. It's been fantastic. Denver Film Festival 38, an enormous success from the John of All Trades perspective, and I'm pleased to bring you this episode. This is with Joey Skaggs and Andrea Marini. They are the subject and the director of The Art of the Prank, and you can check out their work at artoftheprank-themovie.com. And I'll have this all linked on the John of All Trades blog. So go to johnofalltrades.us, J-O-N of all trades.us. There will be links to everything. There will be links to the Art of the Prank Facebook page, their website, the trailer. There's all sorts of stuff there. You need to check this out. And this episode is one that's very meaningful to me because I have a master's degree in media studies. So bachelor's and master's media studies, a lot of it concerns sort of rhetoric, argumentation, sort of how do we build a case for things. But a lot of it was just analyzing the media. What does the media do? You know, what is it capable of? How do we use it? How do we misuse it? How does the media mistreat us? Where are the cracks in the system? That kind of thing. And I would argue that The Art of the Prank is more or less a dissertation on that very subject. And why do I care so much? You know why? Because this shit matters. I had one roommate in college for one semester, and I was writing this piece about, it was, you know, some bullshit assignment that we had, where I was writing about the MTV show Made. And my roommate said to me, man, if I had to watch TV for one of my classes, I'd ask for my fucking money back. And I go, you know what, dude? Fuck you, all right? That's bullshit. You know why? Because the media touches all of us. We all intersect with it. It's how we learn about the world in a lot of ways. Other than firsthand experience, almost everything we get comes through the media. What The Art of the Prank exposes is that a lot of what the media is feeding you is horse shit. Now, there are a lot of reasons and there's a lot of culpability to go around here. But my contention is that what Joey Skaggs does by pranking the media, by coming up with things like a mobile confession booth. He dressed up as a priest, put a confessional booth on the back of his bike, and rode around the Democratic National Convention. What someone like Joey Skaggs does is points out the inherent limitations of our news media in its current system. For someone like me who does PR for a living, sometimes that's an advantage. There's a story I told him off mic that he wasn't surprised by, but that amused him. Where for one of my clients, this was in the past, this was not anything recent, I showed up to do TV. The reporter asked me, it's like, nice to meet you. How are you? Thanks for coming out here. And she asked me, remind me what we're talking about again. She hadn't even read the press release that I had sent her. She didn't know why I was there. She didn't know why she was interviewing me. And she said, what do you want me to ask you? And I'm going, okay, this is great for my client. This is wonderful. Like, our firm is going to do very well for this. And like I said, this was a while ago. But I couldn't help but be a little bit disheartened because these are the people charged with bringing you the events of the world. The fact that I could have just sold her a whole bill of goods and a huge bag of horse shit, and she would have just taken it and put it back out there gladly. You go, oh my God, what is this media system? So the fact that Joey has spent 50 years pranking the media and putting on hoaxes and just hook, line, and sinker one after another, one more ridiculous than the next. It makes you go, wow, I'm really happy someone like this exists because it's almost like checks and balances for society. If you are not paying at least a minimum amount of attention, if you are in a news organization and you don't do basic fact checking, you basically get everything that comes to you. When someone like Joey shows up dressed like Panama Jack, talking about taking a cockroach pill, and you are buying it, And we talk about this on the podcast. This was one of my favorite pranks. I laughed the hardest at this one. And you're on the air and he's got you. He's got you. He's twisting the knife on you. It's basically a live credibility murder on air. You deserve it. We need to do better as a society. And I'm sorry I'm proselytizing. But again, this is near and dear to my heart. It's near and dear to what I do for a living. And we can all do better. And so when I asked Joey, are your pranks a love letter to the world? And I say that because people get so pissed off about these various hoaxes that he does. But I think it's a love letter because it's encouraging us all to do better, to think critically, to examine our biases, to understand how we understand knowledge. He's a modern day philosopher when you get right down to it. And it's just an honor to be able to talk to him and Andrea, who is a wonderful artist, put together a great documentary. It's got propulsive energy. It's really fun to watch. You learn a lot from it. You take a lot away from it and you laugh your ass off. So, I mean, that's what you hope for out of art. Cannot recommend this highly enough. You hear me give it a huge endorsement at the end. I mean every word of it. So, Art of the Prank, check him out on the web. It's artofthepranktheprank.com. You know what? Enough stalling, enough proselytizing for me. Let's get to it. It's episode 81 of the John of All Trades podcast with Joey Skaggs and Andrea Marini. They are the subject and the director of Art of the Prank, and it starts right now. Should I be worried as a member of the media?
Yeah, you're fucked.
I'd expect nothing less. Does it help that I don't get paid?
that helps a little.
Well, it really depends on how responsible you are. So. Yeah. Right. If you're on the good side.
Yeah, I fancy myself a force for good. Okay. So, just so you guys know, you are the third of five that I'm doing here at the Denver Film Festival. When Neil pitched this to me, I was really super excited to talk to you guys. So. Okay.
How long do you want it to be?
45 minutes.
Are you editing this down to 15 minutes?
No, it'll pretty much, I mean, this...
All the fuck-ups you'll cut out?
Yeah. Unless they're entertaining fuck-ups.
Right. Okay, can you say fuck-up?
Oh, yes. Okay. We're on the internet here, Joey.
Okay.
So this okay. is... okay. Yeah, no, I don't even worry about it.
Can you give me your phone?
Oh, don't even.
Maybe it's going to vibrate.
No,
it'll be fine.
I have it
fine.
On my testicles.
Yeah. Do you want me to call it a lot then?
Sorry.
So that it vibrates?
Yeah.
Try to keep the right distance.
Yeah.
Test, 1, 2.
You look
1,
good.
2, test.
Hello.
Yeah.
Don't. Make a good test.
Tasting.
Okay, that's perfect.
Don't make his life difficult.
So, this I really enjoy this dynamic already because you're doing shit and you're going. No, yeah.
Well, you have to wait.
Yeah, we'll switch.
Yeah, well, that's true. A sign of a good partnership, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's like me and my wife. One of us will be upset. The person who's upset, the other person naturally becomes the calmer down.
Right.
You just sort of fall into those roles,
that's
right?
It.
So,
I should beat the shit out of him.
That would make for interesting radio. But sitting here with Joey Skaggs and Andrea Marini, and you are the subject and director of The Art of the Prank, which as we sit here, you guys just screened, right?
Exactly.
How did it go?
Went very, very good.
Yeah,
as far as
it was terrific. I thought.
Yeah.
And
great response.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what the response was. What kind of questions are you guys getting?
Well, you had some good questions. I mean, we had questions on, well, how did we meet each other? And they asked about, well, as far on my end, how I base my decisions in, you know, which prank I'm going to include in the film and which I'm not going to include in the film. What about you, Joy?
One of the interesting problems that we had, I looked at it as a problem, but it, you know, really was the solution, was how do you film a prankster when the prankster's waiting for the media to respond?
Right.
So do you have a cameraman, a sound man, a director, producer, all hanging around the desk waiting for the phone to ring, waiting for ABC or somebody to take the bait?
Right.
And I, you know, was concerned about that. because making a movie is different from doing a prank. So I came up with the concept that I would make a movie myself, and therefore they would be able to follow me around as I made my movie. So my movie, of course, is a hoax.
Right.
And then I submitted my movie to film festivals.
And that was Pandora's Hope, right?
Pandora's Hope.
Right.
And, of course, there's a double-edged sword here because numerous film festivals accepted the hoax without ever questioning the premise.
Yeah.
And then Andrea submits, the art of the prank, and it reveals that I went and screwed film festivals. So it's like, wait a minute, do we really want this film?
You're cannibalizing your audience a little bit.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm making it extremely difficult. But, Denver was really great in accepting the film, realizing what we had done.
Did they accept Pandora's Hope before that?
No. Okay. I didn't submit it to them.
Okay. Well, that's certainly one strategy then, submit Pandora's Hope to certain festivals and then Art of the Prank to others, right?
Well, that's right. That's one way. But, there's a lot of nepotism in the film festival world as well, and buzz gets out. So.
Right.
So, we're looking for a distributor now, and that's... going to be really the test of whether we do it all ourselves or do we have distribution.
Yeah, we're looking for distributions. I mean, we can do part of the distribution by ourselves. But it's interesting that Joey was saying that, the hardest part is to follow someone with a crew and waiting for basically the phone to ring.
Right.
But it was actually, that wasn't really the hardest part to me. To me, it's like I was shooting a film, and while I was shooting the film, I was editing the film without knowing the outcome, without knowing how it's going to end.
Right.
So that's, to me, the most difficult part.
Yeah.
Structuring a movie based upon a concept.
It's a documentary. It's a mystery. How long do I have to shoot? When is something going to happen?
Right.
Is something ever going to happen?
Exactly.
Right. When do we pull the plug?
Yeah.
And he had to wait for me, which was also... an addition to the duration of the completion of his film, because I had to have my film sent out to film festivals way in advance, and then you wait to see if you are accepted, and then you got to go to the film festivals,
So it was, and you got to protest it.
Yeah, it was an extended situation,
and it was really an evolution because it was constantly morphing as his art is. You need to be aware of that and constantly changing. And, I like to make it as real as possible. I didn't want to alter reality in any way.
Right. So you brought it up before. And so I want to go back a little bit. How did you come to get connected with Joey?
Yeah, well, long story short.
I mean, I know that's as prosaic a question as I can ask here.
I'll just start it and you can continue it. I was giving lectures in Italy, in Milan and in Rome, in some universities, and there was someone who was laughing very loudly in the audience. And as usually the case, after you finish, that's when it gets more interesting, because that's when people take you out and you eat and you drink and you have real conversations and you're not lecturing to people or trying to explain a story. And... Michela is the producer that sat down and said, I want to do a documentary on your work. And I said, okay. And he brought over Andrea.
Yeah. So, and on my end, I was working with this producer, with Michela, on another project, on developing a screenplay for a feature narrative. So I wasn't really into documentaries at the time. And so one day he came to me and said, look, there's a possibility of doing a film about this man. This is Joey Skaggs. I didn't know Joey at the time.
Right.
So I said, okay, let's talk about it and show me something. And he gave me this 2020 piece about Joey. Mm-hmm. So that night I watched the piece and I freaked out.
Right.
And the day after I said, okay, I don't care about what we're doing now. Just
we have to do this.
Right. It's going to be quick. It took 3 years and a half.
Wow.
And don't forget, he came to me 3.5 years ago. That's 3.5 years younger.
Right.
So he's a young man. And I remember what it was like for me being a young artist. and people not really caring. Oh, well, you know, you say you're an artist now, but, you know, you'll be doing something else later.
Yeah.
And I always like to encourage and support young artists. I was a teacher at the School of Visual Arts and Parsons School of Design. Right. And, you know, I encourage people to follow their passions. And, if you know, so it was, to me, I had an immediate connection to Andrea and trusted him and saw his brilliance, and that was it.
That's fantastic.
I cry. No, seriously, thank you.
It reminds me of, I recently spoke at my alma mater and the master's students, and I said, you guys are in a great spot because I created just this podcast. You can create out of whole cloth here, which is one of the things that I was struck by as I was watching the film. Your very first prank, taking what I don't know if I want to call it the very first prank, but the first one you highlight, taking the hippies up to suburban Bronx.
Queens.
I'm sorry. Not.
That's all right. Same thing.
Taking them up to suburban Queens and you know, giving them tours of people mowing their lawns and, you know,
washing their cars.
Exactly. And taking pictures of them. Right. And everyone goes, whoa, what are you doing to us?
We're being invaded.
Yeah, we're being invaded. And, it's like you want to make art, but you want that immediate reaction.
Right.
And that was just so cool to me because it's such a DIY punk rock aesthetic. Immediately, as we highlight that, that's what sort of drew me into the film, because I grew up, my dad was a prankster. He's always been a prankster. He's always pranking his brothers. And I'm not going to bore you with that, but it endeared me to you. And so you have a long career of doing this. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you said, I think it's on your website, you have a favorite quote. It's the madman creates for himself, the poet for a lover, and the artist for the world, right?
Right.
Would you say the pranks that you do, pranking these media, culture jamming, are they a love letter to the world? Is it, hey, you can do better here?
Well, I'm really a messenger, and my work hopefully makes you ask these questions. Who am I? What do I believe in? How did I come to my beliefs? Do I ever question the source of my beliefs? If not, why not?
I like that. I mean, that's pretty simple. The reason I think it's a love letter to the world is because as an artist, you know, you are creating for the world, and you are saying, hey, you know what? It's exactly as you laid out, but it's a gift because we can all push to do better. Do people get angry with you for the work that you do?
Well, of course, because I rattle the status quo. I challenge people's preconceived notions. I hopefully make them, you know, think about things in a different way. I mean, dog meat soup, you know. I mean, we are the cultural police of the world. You know, other cultures that don't have a problem with eating dog,
right?
But in America, you know, we don't eat dog in America. You know, they're pets. They're never a meal.
They're our buddies.
Yeah, yeah. But we can eat a hamburger in front of a Hindu, and it doesn't matter. Hey, your grandma tastes good. Good cow. And we don't give a shit about what Hindus believe.
Right.
You know, but...
Why do you think people get so angry? Why do you think they're so resistant to changing the status quo?
Well, people don't like change.
Yeah.
They believe. And when you question their beliefs or try to get them to question their beliefs, they're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And anyone who is different, of course, you know the story, you know, you're suspicious.
Right.
Or you're resentful, or you hate them, or you kill them.
Right.
And that's what we do.
Andrea, as you sort of dug into Joey's work, what was that experience like for you as you went through this whole long history of interacting with the media and, you know, enacting change and getting people to think differently?
Yeah, well, I can say that I've learned a lot from this, not only by making a documentary, which is an amazing thing.
Right.
I say that if you want to learn how to write a screenplay, edit a documentary, because, you know, you have to deal with reality and put in a structure that it's the structure of a film. But then, you know, I've learned a lot from Joey and in the attitude that you... No, that's true. And in the attitude that you need to have. And it's funny that before you were mentioning the bus tour to Queens.
Yeah.
And that's probably the greatest thing I've learned is juxtaposition of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I'm carrying with me with everything else I'm doing. Like all the time. Like this is the most important thing that you have to keep
and
in mind.
And an ironic reversal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But especially in you know, in storytelling, you know, juxtaposition is key.
Absolutely. And speaking of juxtaposition with that particular prank, that prank to me demonstrates, or at least should demonstrate, the highest levels of empathy. Because you have busloads of squares coming in and looking at these hippies as if they're animals in the zoo, taking pictures of them. And as soon as you reverse that, people go, whoa, I don't like how that feels. It's like, well, yeah, motherfucker. Then think about what you're doing
right.
as you go down to the village,
that's
right?
That's right.
That's right.
That to me connotes a very highly developed sense of empathy. Am I misreading that at all?
No, not at all. And I do have another saying where when I tell my co-conspirators when we're waiting for the suckers, the news media, to walk into the room and knowing that we're going to screw them, that we must suspend empathy because it'll be a young, attractive, you know, person who's really sincere and trying to do her job as a journalist. You know, she's an idiot. She didn't Google me. Right. You know, she didn't do her homework. She doesn't give a shit. So, you know, but, you know, you still feel a little bad that this poor person.
Still a person.
Yeah, still a person. So in order to pull it off, you must suspend empathy because we have a purpose, and that is to illustrate how people so blindly pass on information. It's the misinformed misinforming the uninformed. The ill-informed misinforming the uninformed.
Well, to me, I would say the individual reporters are collateral damage here. Because what you're doing is you are sticking a stick, you know, putting a stick in the eye of the institution. And the reporters themselves are probably under whatever pressures they're under you're interviewing this guy.
Right.
It probably didn't necessarily originate with the reporters that you're fucking with.
Right.
Do you ever feel bad for that sort of collateral damage? Because it seems like your targets are a little bit bigger.
Well, you know, I have empathy for everyone,
sure.
But I have a purpose. And it's, you know, I'm an artist and my art is satire, you know, there's collateral damage, you know, satire bites. And I don't make a lot of friends when, you know, I bite certain people. But the whole thing is, you know, if you're a journalist, you have a responsibility to try to be finding the truth.
Fourth estate, right?
And if you don't do that, or if you misrepresent it intentionally, you're misleading the public. And I just try to show the power that the media has to mold public opinion and that they can be, and sometimes in most cases are, irresponsible and prejudiced and biased and, you know, careless.
I would argue one of the things you're pointing out is a dereliction of duty.
Yeah.
Is that?
That's right.
Is that fair?
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
I'm just a messenger. I'm just ringing the bell. We're being lied to. The lie is the message.
I don't know if that's necessarily what Marshall McLuhan had in mind when he said the medium is the message, but the lie is the message.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
How has the media changed from the time you started doing this to now?
Well, it's just new ways of delivering it, but a story is a story. A story will always be a story. So, you know, whether it was a radio or a town crier to a newspaper to the radio to television to the internet, technology evolves, but you know, we're all people,
you know, right?
You know, we're all full of shit. You know, we deceive ourselves. You know, and we want to deceive others. You know, they're for various reasons.
Hmm.
They want to sell you a service, a philosophy, a religion, a product.
Right.
You know, a politician. You know, it's you have to be able to understand what the message is. It's all about understanding how the media works and being media literate.
You know, it's funny you mentioned media literacy because in your manifesto you encourage people to seek out more than one source of information.
Right.
Well, in the social media age that we live in, that's easier than ever. But I would argue that most people tend to seek out that which they already agree with or that which confirms their bias.
Yeah.
How do you get around that? Or how do you shift
people? Smack them.
You smack the shit out of them. And is that, I mean, as we sort of evolve... you know, how has the changing media landscape changed the way that you structure a prank? Because I would argue when you were doing this, say, 30 years ago, there were fewer networks.
50 years ago.
Even 50 years ago, there were fewer outlets.
Yeah.
But it was almost like a higher value get. Now it's much more fractured. Is that part of the calculus in terms of what you do?
Well, what I do is challenging. It's I'm not the only person who's out there trying to get media attention.
Right.
You know, so I'm in competition with everyone else who wants to get media attention. But again, it's what are you offering to them and how do you do that? As I said in the film, you know, you have to have a good story mm-hmm. and a good visual and make it newsworthy. And I attempt to do that when I do a prank.
Right.
Whether it's sexual or whatever it is that I'm, you know, presenting.
Sure.
I want to make it tantalizing or sensational. I want to sucker you in.
Well, it's funny because I've worked in traditional PR, and so we'll be writing some fucking press release about some terrible event that we're doing, and the word that always comes up is like, can you make the headline sexier?
Right.
And it's like, this is not a sexual thing that we're trying to do.
It doesn't matter. So, give it a pair of tits.
Slap a pair of tits on it. Yeah. But it'll sell itself.
That's right.
This is a nonprofit for kids.
Yeah. Maybe, but, maybe today is easier to hide a lie.
Hmm.
You know, you have many different elements. You know, you can create fake outlets, fake websites. It's easier, but you know, I think in Joey's approach, you know, it's more pure, and he likes to red flag everything. You know, there's no meaning in hiding the truth just because you're really good in hiding something. You need to prove that the media is not that responsible. And if you hide everything like very, very well, you know, there's right. no purpose.
Well, what he just said, or what Andrea just said about giving them red flags, clues.
Yeah.
I mean, I use facsimiles of my name or, you know, right. literary clues, you know, like the Fat Squad. I was, you know, Joe Bones, you know, or Metamorphosis, the Cockroach Vitamin Pill. You know, Gregor Samsa from Kafka, Metamorphosis. So
Kama Cocoon, Dr. Schlaffer.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I just red flag it so that, you know, any half-thinking half-wit would, you know, wait a minute.
You're hoping someone literate's going to go, wait, hold on. Something right. about this is too right. cute.
And when they don't get it, it makes the hoax even more powerful.
It's like when your friend on Facebook shares an onion story and, right. and goes,
believes it.
Can you believe right. what Obama's doing? And you go, right. this isn't real, idiot. Did you see right. where this is from?
It's a sad commentary on yeah. where we're at, you know.
I'd just like to touch on the cockroach one because that that one made me laugh out loud the hardest. It was that part where the talking haircut yeah. next to you
yeah.
is just buying into this shit and introducing you as doctor. And you're going, oh, my God, he's dressed like Panama Jack. Right. And I could see it. It was almost like you were restraining glee as you were twisting the knife on him and you hit that tape recorder. And I hope I'm not giving too much away here, but when you hit the tape recorder and it plays La Cucaracha and the female anchor just loses her mind yes. laughing.
Yes.
I go, okay, this was a thing of beauty.
It never ceases to amaze me that I get away with this shit.
Still, that's got to be both incredibly invigorating and oddly dispiriting. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, because, you know, you want people to be smarter than they are. You know,
right.
You know, catch me. Come on, please catch me.
Right.
And they don't. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Even they want to be the first
yeah.
for something sensational.
Yeah.
As you were directing this film and as you were structuring it, yeah. Because the film has sort of a propulsive energy to it, which I really enjoyed. It was really easy to watch. It zipped by for me. Just so much fun. Were you sort of aware as you watched these pranks unfold, did it make you think, as I structure this film, I need to make sure I'm not full of shit? Was that something that
what do you mean exactly by that?
So as you see sort of people fall into the narrative traps that Joey lays.
Yeah.
Did that make you more cognizant of the way you laid out your narrative?
Yeah, I would say.
I mean, given you're not doing a news story, but a documentary, I would argue, is sort of a form of, you know, you touch on storytelling a lot. The news media wants a story.
He had a tremendous, I'm just going to jump in here. He had a tremendously difficult job.
Yeah.
Because he had to follow a current narrative and yet use my archive to help tell the story of who I am and what I do and why I do it and what it means.
Right.
So he had to make selections that fit his concept of the story.
Yeah, the point is, I mean, are you talking about like selecting pranks?
Sure.
To fit the story, you know, in that terms, like the storyline of the film is the present, you know, it's the Pandora's Hope hoax and the developing of that hoax. And, you know, I try to pick hoaxes from Joey's archive to add something to the storyline, to the structure of the film.
Right.
So, for example, when you jump to the cockroaches, you know, it's something sensational that, you know, it's connected with the teeth, you know. I don't want to give it away too much.
Yeah, of course.
or improvisation in acting.
Yeah.
Then it's reflected in the present. And then, you know, the beginning is, it's another part. You know, it's truly a story of a young guy, a young kid, with a passion, with a dream.
Yeah.
And eventually a mission in his life. So it's a story.
And poor Andrea had to go through countless hours of my archive.
150.
To make creative choices as to what he was going to include in the film.
Yeah, because you have to hire press.
He had to become familiar. He had to become, who is this guy?
Right.
What do I have to work with?
Well, and you must have a tremendous archive because I read that you hire press clipping services when you do this, right?
Right.
So you had to comb through all of that?
Oh, yeah.
How long did that take?
Several times, actually.
Yeah.
Not like. Well, you can say that, you know, I started shooting like more than 3 years and a half ago.
Yeah.
I started editing probably a few months after.
Okay.
And I was already looking at the archive, you know, to study Joey's work. So, yeah, basically, I would say it has been at least 3 years of research, selection, editing. And as I was telling you before.
Yeah, and filming.
You know, I was editing with the editor who did a tremendous job. And, you know, editing while the story was unfolding in real time. So I had to change the structure every time.
Oh, you know? God.
So, and, you know, I had, like, this hoax is good for, you know, to deliver this message.
Yeah.
And then maybe I remove that part of the film, so I have to figure out where to use that hoax or to pick another one. And, you know, connecting dots, basically.
It's like you're playing three-dimensional chess.
Oh, yeah.
At all times, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And there are so many ways to approach this story. Again, you know, I try to narrate a story of a man with a passion, a story of will and determination. You know, no matter what happens, just go ahead.
That's the thread that ties it all together.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was early in the film, as you're getting ready to ride up with a missile on a bike to the UN, you mentioned that you had that you saw The Dictator with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Right. Yeah.
And that sort of that put a crimp in your plans.
Well, you know, artists like to be the first to do something.
Of
I don't
course.
Like following anyone.
Well, no, you don't want the art sloppy seconds.
Right.
What is your because you've been doing this for so long and it feels like there are others that have come up and so I don't know.
I spawned them.
Is that how you feel?
Well, I hopefully inspired them.
So I wanted to ask you about a few.
Sure.
Your opinions. Someone like Andy Kaufman.
Love Andy Kaufman.
Did you guys intersect ever?
No.
Okay.
No. But, you know, doing something for doing comedy for television, be it John Stewart or Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
or,
Daily Show.
You know, all that stuff.
Right.
You have great writers. Mm-hmm. You have prop people. You have, you know, a budget, a huge budget, and whether it's, you know, funny or not, or mildly funny, it's going to be on national television.
Right.
what I do as an artist is I don't have the luxury of having a tremendous crew, staff, budget to
corporate backing,
right? To assist me in my creativity, I've got to succeed in fooling the media, and that is much harder than doing a comedy show.
Have you ever been tempted, or have you ever been approached to do something like that?
Oh, sure.
And what prevented?
Numerous times, and they give you a contract which says they will own your sperm, past, right, present, and future.
Yeah. And is that what kept you from making that leap?
Yeah, well, you know, I just didn't want to be controlled. I don't want corporate creativity. I don't want to be reduced to doing things that are acceptable to a group, to an advertiser.
Right.
You know, I don't need to answer to anyone. And if something comes along where they say, go ahead, you have free rein, and we can do provocative things that challenge the status quo, I would possibly think about it. But, you know, I'm getting long in the tooth. I'm right. Old, you know. I'm not the young, handsome guy that they like to have a lot of sex appeal on TV. I'm old. Let's get real. I've been around for a while.
I wouldn't say that makes you any less sexy.
Oh, thank you.
Well, why not, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. There are some 90-year-old ladies who love to have me.
Yeah, sex appeal is like 99% of the film, I would say.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Easily. 90-95 conservative side?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would you say, okay, so discounting anyone who's sort of making comedy for television, are you sort of spiritually akin with someone like Banksy?
Well, I love what Banksy does.
Sure. Because when I see him, he seems to have a DIY aesthetic. And as I was watching the film, I thought, because I saw, I think it was on HBO, it wasn't even made with his approval, the documentary about Banksy takes New York.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really good.
Well, Banksy sent his director-producer to interview me for a...
The Antics Road Show.
Yeah.
It's a very successful TV show in the UK. It's beautiful.
Right.
And what was that like?
Well, it was nice to be singled out and be part of a Banksy project and to have my work shown around the world through a Banksy project. That was nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was a compliment. But don't forget, I'm probably Banksy could be my grandson.
Yeah. You were the real guru in that piece, sitting on the rock.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm gonna have to seek it out. Is that available online?
Yeah.
All probably. Right. We'll make sure to plug that. I do a companion blog piece, so we'll make sure to get that in there.
You have to find the right episode.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. You know, it's funny because you mentioned you've been approached to do sort of comedy television. Have you been approached by sort of traditional PR people? Because everyone, and you have an interview in the film.
That happens too. Sure.
And what would you say is the closest you've been to going, you know what, that's something I could do?
I don't get close.
Okay.
I mean, because it's mostly bullshit.
Right.
You know, why would I want to, you know, do something bullshit having a track record of what I've done, you know, to go and... I just got approached from a big ad agency, huge ad agency in England to do something for Domino's Pizza in England. You know, I said, well, you're brave. That was my response to them.
And they disappeared.
And they disappeared.
Wow. You know, that's amazing because one of the things we talk about in this business is it takes a lifetime to build credibility and only a second to erode it.
That's right.
So the fact that you've stayed, I mean, almost everyone sells out at some point, though, right? And
not everyone.
Is that something that...
Or if they do, you know, you don't know about it, you know, or, you know, you don't know what the price was. I mean, everyone, you know, it's your own personal choice what you choose to do.
Right.
I explain this. You go to art school, you learn skills, you use tools, and then what you do with your talent is up to you. Do you want to sell tobacco or do you want to show how tobacco hurts you? Hmm. You know, you're an artist, so you can do one or the other. So it's choices that you have the ability to make. what you do with your life is, you know, your choice.
Yeah.
So
what is your take on the news today? You said you don't think it's changed all that much, but when you have something like BuzzFeed, that the editor of BuzzFeed is frequently a panelist on Meet the Press, but also BuzzFeed will have like real first-person accounts of important events, like, say, Ferguson, Missouri,
yeah,
next to an article about like 23 Tumblr posts that hilariously sum up having boobs.
Right.
Is it worth pranking the media? Because that almost is parody itself.
Well, it's harder and harder to prank what's already absurd.
Right.
You know, it's a hard job, and that's my job, is to find some way of doing that.
Do you still,
as absurd as the world is, you know, there are still, you know, ways in which you can try to point out how fucking stupid it really is.
Do you still have the same passion towards the media as you did when you started this?
Well, my
or
passion
has it evolved?
My passion is about, you know, certain things. Yeah, I'm a passionate person, and I try to do a hoax which will illustrate those passions, you know, issues.
Yeah.
You know, dog meat soup, you know, cultural police, you know, the Solomon Project, where, you know, artificial intelligence takes over human decision making, you know, the whole American judicial system.
Oh, the OJ thing?
Yeah, the OJ thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You might want to see the movie again. There's a lot there, you know.
Yeah. 100%. Question for you. Do you have a most personally satisfying prank? Do you rank them like that?
No, I don't.
Do you have a favorite one, Andrea?
I tend not to have a favorite thing in general. Maybe I would say the cat house for dogs, but just because it's, you know, like the first, it's how it all started. And right. I see it from the point of view of, you know, the film as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's probably that's the one.
That one's probably up there for you. That was a good one.
Yeah, and especially, you know, that's the Kickstarter, you know. It's
right. Andrea, what's next for you guys? So you're showing it here.
Yes.
And it is, so give us the dates. I'm not sure this is going to be up by the time that this runs, but where can people find you guys? Plug anything you want right now.
Right. So our screenings at the Denver Film Festival are tomorrow, November 14th, 3:45 p.m., and the day after, November 15, 11:30 p.m.
Okay.
You can find us on www.artoftheprank-themovie.com.
Okay.
You can look for us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe so you're going to have updates for the film. That's basically the only way, you know, the easiest way to get
awesome
updates. And as far as release dates or screenings. And next is Amsterdam. We're going to go to this huge market. It's IDFA, Docs for Sale.
Nice.
It's the biggest market in Europe and one of the biggest in the world for documentaries. Then we're going to have many events around Europe, and we're planning on other events around the States. Because, no, really, this film is not just for film festivals or film events. This is really a piece of history.
Yeah.
And it has to be shown in universities, counterculture festivals, you know, all these kind of avenues. You know, it's really important for us to go in both directions.
In my estimation, I have a master's degree in media studies. This should be shown in every single media pop culture
class. Right on.
Just to illustrate, hey, like, here's how the news media functions. Here's where the cracks in the system are. This should be shown in journalism classes, too. You want to be a journalist? Don't let this happen to you.
Right.
Do your fucking fact checking.
Right.
You know, do the legwork. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And while you learn, be entertained as well.
It's just funny. It's a joy to watch.
Yeah.
As you're pedaling around in front of the DNC, wearing a priest outfit, with a portable confession, that's funny.
Yes.
I mean, that in itself, just, you don't even have to see the film. As I described that to you via an audio medium, that's worth watching.
Right. Yeah.
100%.
And I have to thank all the people that have worked so hard in making this film real.
And all the people who supported me over my
career.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
When you get co-conspirators, do you have to talk them through Cold Feet? Is that a common thing for
do
you?
I have to
talk them through cold feet.
Like, well, people are afraid that something might happen. They'll get arrested, and what's going to happen?
Right.
You know, and I try not to break the law. You know, I try to convince them that they don't have to do it if they don't want to do it. But you know, if they really believe in what I'm doing and what the message is, you know, go for it.
Did I read that you have a prank out there that is not found yet? Is that accurate in 2015? That might have been an old interview.
So. No, you said that.
I can't talk about things like that.
Yeah. He will never tell you.
Fair enough.
But I remember you saying that.
I can't say so things like
you're
that.
You're probably drunk.
Just watch out.
Just watch your back.
Watch out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andrea, Joey, this was an enormous thrill for me. I love the film. I want to point as many people as possible to it because not only is it fun to watch and is it entertaining, you're going to take away, it'll give you something to think about. So thank you both for taking the time to be
thank
on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that'll do it here on the John of All Trades podcast, episode 81. Joey Skaggs, Andrea Marini, they were the guests. They were wonderful guests. And I wish them nothing but the best of luck in furthering the journey of Art of the Prank. I meant what I said. This really needs to be viewed by anyone who wants to be a journalist or anyone who wants to work in media. Don't let this man or anyone do this to you. Do your fact checking. Do your job. Be better at your job. That really could go for anyone. So, thank you to Andrea and Joey for taking the time to talk to me. Thanks to the Denver Film Festival. We've got two more coming up. This one airs on Monday. We've got another one Tuesday, another one Wednesday. We close out the week strong. It's fantastic. I love doing the Denver Film Festival. So, pay some love to them. Again, that's on the blog, johnofalltrades.us. And pay some love to our sponsor while you're at it. 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. They're your one-stop shop for everything that you could possibly need. Running a campaign, marketing your product. These guys are not full of shit. I will tell you that. They are guns for hire, but they are not full of shit. I have worked with them extensively. They are fantastic. And the reason I say that is because my defenses are all up after talking to Joey Skaggs and Andrea Marini. But I assure you, 4Degrees, wonderful group. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check us out on the web, DEFTCOM.US. We'll be back here tomorrow, episode 82. We have two more filmmakers. It's fantastic. Denver Film Festival week rolls on. And so, until then, say goodnight, Gracie.